Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dakota Digest on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Each week, we'll recap the top news stories happening in our state. I'm Nate Weck, and thanks for joining me. The U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services is set to terminate South Dakota's participation in the EB-5 program, stating a failure to submit required information and demonstrate promotion of economic growth. U.S. Senator Mike Rounds says federal government officials have a right to ask questions. SDPB's Jennifer Jones has more.
The notice of intent to terminate lays out several flaws in the South Dakota Regional Center, including a failure to fully account for capital investments, conflicting information on filings, and diversion of funds from job creation purposes. It also cites a lack of due diligence, monitoring, and oversight. Senator Mike Rounds says EB-5's intent is good. The idea is to bring in money for economic development purposes in exchange for visas for investors. But he wishes it would work correctly.
The programs that went on successfully, we don't normally talk a lot about those. We want to talk about the businesses which either went under because they're private businesses with private investment coming in. We'll focus on those, but nonetheless, there was good that happened with the EB-5 program as well. Can it be made better? Yeah, I think it probably can. But it does take oversight from the federal government, and if they are coming in and they're asking for additional information or they want to make changes, that's a healthy thing to have happen as well.
Round says he won't lobby to block the termination.
A man convicted of manslaughter in Rapid City after shooting and killing one of his assailants argued self-defense before the South Dakota Supreme Court earlier this year. On Thursday, justices affirmed the trial court on all issues but one. SDPV's Vicki Wicks says that concern goes back to the judge for more action.
The state argued at trial that Charles Birdshead went to the Rose Inn to sell meth to a 15-year-old girl. There he was attacked in his car by two men who repeatedly hit him in the head. Birdshead pulled a sawed-off shotgun and killed one of them. Birdshead's lawyer argued that her client was defending himself, but the state cited several factors that did not add up to a legal self-defense situation. Supreme Court justices held that the defendant received a fair trial in spite of shortcomings in the trial judge's creation of a record on certain issues. But justices found that one issue still needs to be resolved at the circuit court level. Before the trial, Birdshead asked to see certain documents, including witness files held by the Unified Narcotics Enforcement Team, or UNET. Judge Wally Eklund read those documents in camera and afterward ruled that the defense could not see them. Supreme Court justices also reviewed those documents, and they were unable to make a determination about the UNET files because they're not part of the settled record. Justices sent the case back to Eklund to make a written justification for denying the files to the defense. Eklund is also asked to make a ruling whether the files contain evidence that the state withheld information from the defense that would have helped its case. And if yes, he is to determine whether a new trial is required.
Nearly 300 bison were processed at Wind Cave National Park this week in preparation for shipping a portion of them to several ranches across the country. The labor-intensive task took 3 days and required dozens of park personnel and volunteers. SDPB's Jim Kent attended the rather noisy event and filed this report.
Maneuvering several hundred pounds of young bison through a series of metal holding chutes to measure and weigh them is no easy matter. But it's a process, says biologist Dan Roddy, that the park's personnel are well experienced in, even when it comes to the most delicate procedure.
If they're animals that haven't been brought in before, we're pulling tail hairs and drawing blood for genetics.
How's that go?
They jump a little bit when you pull the tail hairs, but for the most part, they're more concerned about what's going on at their head.
At each bison's head, park personnel are placing a metal ear tag along with a computer chip behind the ear. Bison are also identified by age and sex at this point, along with having their blood drawn and their health assessed. Roddy notes that the primary goal is to accomplish each procedure as quickly as possible and with as little stress as possible for both the animals and those personnel involved. Once all the bison have been processed, 75 yearlings are culled from the herd for shipment to ranches in Missouri, Iowa, Illinois, and Kansas. Those bison are transported to their destination by the Nature Conservancy, says Wind Cave Resource Management Chief Greg Schrader.
The Nature Conservancy has signed on an agreement with us to be a conservation partner. And they have five different ranches right now that have wind cave only bison on them. So they're helping to conserve the genetic lineage of these wind cave bison.
That partnership with the Nature Conservancy is necessary, explained Schrader, since Wind Cave National Park can only support about 500 bison, a number the current herd has already reached. Although the Nature Conservancy has partnered with the park to facilitate this preservation of the Wind Cave bison's genetic lineage, Greg Schrader says he'd also like to partner with Native American tribes.
We are looking for tribes that would be interested in joining the same kind of partnership with us and having a Wind Cave conservation herds on their tribal grounds.
Wind Cave National Park holds bison processing operations like this whenever its herd reaches the 500 mark.
The U.S. House and Senate have passed the latest National Defense Authorization Act. President Obama has said he will veto the measure, but U.S. Senator John Thune says he hopes the House and Senate will override the president's decision. SDPB's Jennifer Jones has more.
Senator John Thune says a veto denies Congress the authority it needs to fund the military and national security programs.
The president wants to pick a fight over how many millions of dollars the federal government should spend on IRS bureaucrats or EPA bureaucrats. That's fine, but he should leave our military men and women out of it. I'm hoping that he will have a change of heart and sign this common sense bill into law.
President Obama objects to the measure because it uses $90 billion meant for war spending to avoid mandatory sequestration budget cuts. The White House press secretary says that's an irresponsible way to fund national defense priorities. The measure heads back to the House first. Thune says it may be a few votes short for a veto override, but he hopes that changes.
A woman who survived the Boston Marathon bombing says people with disabilities deserve respect and opportunity. She is one speaker during the week's Disabilities Rights Conference in Sioux Falls. The gathering is aimed at health workers, business leaders, educators, and officials to raise awareness and remind people of their role in protecting the rights of people with disabilities. SDPB's Keely Boltina has the story.
Before April 15, 2013, Heather Abbott was a full-time human resources manager who specialized in affirmative action and equal employment opportunity.
So I was helping my company to attract and retain women, minorities, veterans, and people with disabilities. Never, ever did I think I would become one of those people with a disability. So I have a whole new perspective now.
Abbott was at the finish line of the Boston Marathon more than 2 years ago to support runners completing the race. Shrapnel from the second of two bombs hit her left foot. It was so severe she had to amputate her left leg below the knee. Now Abbott stands in Sioux Falls in black high-heeled peep-toe shoes. She uses a prosthetic leg. Abbott says she refuses to let a disability rob her of things she enjoys.
I didn't love running before I lost my leg, but I didn't want to give it up either. You don't want anything taken away. You know, a lot of people complain about their jobs, but I bet, you know, the second they're told they can't go there anymore, they wouldn't be too happy about it. So it's really important for people's, I think, sanity and a respect to be able to resume their lives the way that they had before, or as close to the way that they lived it before, that they can.
Abbott says people with disabilities have rights. She says employers should make reasonable accommodations so they can retain qualified workers regardless of disability.
A Sioux Falls teacher is a recipient of a prestigious education honor. Teachers can apply for the Milken Educator Award. The foundation identifies candidates and selects them without letting the teacher know. That is, until this week at a surprise assembly. SDPB's Keely Boltina takes us to Roosevelt High School in Sioux Falls for this special ceremony.
Hundreds of students at Sioux Falls Roosevelt High School stomp up bleachers in the gym. The band plays as they fill the stands and spill out onto the hardwood floor. After introductions, Jane Foley with the Milken Family Foundation tells students one teacher can positively influence thousands of lives.
One of the best teachers in the entire country out of 3 million teachers is here in your school.
Foley says the recipient has the potential to be a leader in education for decades. South Dakota Secretary of Education Melody Schopp says the teacher recognized also wins $25,000. Then she announces the recipient of the Milken Educator Award.
And the winner is Gina Benz.
Benz pulls her hands to her face as she stands and walks to the microphone. She's visibly stunned. Benz says she suspected a few of her colleagues, but didn't expect to hear her name. Benz teaches English classes.
Part of it is getting to the students' hearts right away and saying, this is why this book matters to you. Even though it was written in 1850 among a bunch of, you know, white Puritans in New England, it really still matters to you, and that's why it's still published today. And so we get to the heart of the matter. What are the lessons this book is teaching us? How is it helping us to be better people?
Ben says students have many obligations, so she includes reading opportunities in class. She says that allows them to personally connect with the material and make time for reading outside the school day.
The Bush Foundation has awarded about $7 million in grants to boost education initiatives in South Dakota. The grants aim to add to the number of Native American teachers overall and also to increase the number of indigenous language teachers. One grant also boosts an effort to build more customized learning strategies for schools. SDPB's Charles Michael Ray has more.
Robert Cook is an Oglala Sioux tribal member who leads the Native Achievement Initiative for Teach for America. The organization recruits top-tier college graduates and professionals to become educators in high-need areas. Teach for America received a $2 million grant from the Bush Foundation to boost the number of Native teachers in South Dakota. Cook says the organization started with 17 teachers in 2004. Today, he says, there are over 100 educators across the state.
The grant's going to really help us to drive our recruitment of Native teachers and hopefully to matriculate them into the classrooms to serve in tribal schools across South Dakota, but also to support our Native and non-Native teachers in becoming, you know, stronger teachers in the culturally responsive pedagogy.
The Sisseton Wahpeton Sioux Tribe also won a $1 million grant from the Bush Foundation to turn out more Lakota and Dakota language instructors. The group Technology and Education with the Black Hills Special Services Cooperative received a $4 million grant to boost customized education that fits with students' culture and learning styles.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Dakota Digest. For more radio news and other programming information, visit sdpb.org. You can also connect with us on social media. Like us on Facebook, just search for South Dakota Public Broadcasting, or follow us on Twitter. Our news account is at SDPB News, and our organization account is at SODACPB. You can also follow us for sports on Twitter. That account is at SDPB Sports. We'll be back again next Friday for another edition of Dakota Digest on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Nate Weck, and have a great day.